In a world where uncertainty reigns supreme, where shadows of chaos dance at every turn, one truth emerges unyielding. Preparation is not a luxury, but a lifeline. Behold the Wellness Company, a beacon of readiness amidst the tempestuous seas of fate. Envision a sanctuary of tranquility, where the tumult of unforeseen medical crises finds no purchase. The Wellness Company's Medical Emergency Kit stands as a bastion of assurance, a fortress of resilience against the unseen foes of health. Within its sacred confines lie the tools of salvation. Ivermectin, to ward off the insidious whispers of disease. Emergency antibiotics, to quell the raging storms of infection. Antivirals, to vanquish the relentless tides of contagion, and more. The Wellness Company Medical Emergency Kit is not merely a collection of supplies, it is the embodiment of preparedness itself. Crafted by the hands of esteemed healers led by luminaries such as Dr. Peter McCullough, Dr. James Thorpe, Dr. Harvey Risch, and Dr. Drew Pinsky, this kit stands as the pinnacle of safety, the zenith of prevention. These truth-seeking doctors have forged a testament to vigilance, a testament to the unwavering pursuit of well-being. Embrace the certainty that comes from being armed against adversity. Embrace the Wellness Company, for in its embrace lies the promise of resilience, the promise of a brighter tomorrow amidst the chaos of today. Don't wait for the next crisis to strike. Visit twc.health/strangeplanet and use promo code STRANGEPLANET for an exclusive 10% discount. Prepare today and rest easy tomorrow.
Wyndham Hotels and Resorts makes travel possible for all. Whether it's the long haulers looking for a great cup of coffee, a roomier rest for the on a whim road trippers, or a place to make summer memories with the whole family. No matter who you are, where you're going, or why, with 24 trusted brands to choose from like La Quinta, Days Inn, and Super 8, your Wyndham is waiting. Get the lowest price at WyndhamHotels.com. Restrictions apply. Visit website for more details.
Every town has a dark side. This is Andrew Fitzgerald from the Every Town podcast, where every single week we dive into insane and mysterious true crime stories, most of which you've never heard of. Stories like the bizarre disappearance of Tyler Davis in Columbus, Ohio, a 29-year-old father trying to find his way back to his hotel when he disappeared and was never heard from again, and Elizabeth Schoaf from Lugoff, South Carolina, who was abducted from her driveway by a madman and taken to his underground bunker in the woods. We give you all the details you're interested in hearing about without any fluff or fillers, because ain't nobody got time for that. We cover everything from psychopaths to poltergeists, so go check out the Every Town podcast, because every town, no matter how nice it may seem, has a dark side.
Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serrett.
On this episode, cracking the Hermetic Code, revealing Masonic symbolism in public places.
He contained in one building this kind of encyclopedia of world architecture as an homage to the craft of Freemasonry. And in that regard, there is one building that stands alone as the beau ideal of perfection, and that's King Solomon's Temple. And that's where he chose to incorporate perhaps the most important room in the building as a perfect reconstruction of the Holy of Holies of King Solomon's Temple with a replica Ark of the Covenant.
Did you know you can now stream episodes of this podcast on your mobile device? All you need is my new Conspiracy Unlimited app. It's absolutely free, and it's available for both iOS and Android devices. If you're a Conspiracy Unlimited Plus member, pay attention. You can now stream premium content from your mobile device. My free Conspiracy Unlimited app for iOS and Android, available from the App Store and Google Play. Get yours today and start streaming Conspiracy Unlimited on your mobile device.
Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serrett. Pursuing the truth wherever it leads. Exposing evil and corruption and the secret machinations of powerful elites. Revealing the high strangeness beneath the surface of our supposed reality. Coming to you from his studio beneath the stairs, here's Richard Serrett.
Welcome to your Monday. Well, I'm dipping into my vast audio archives for this one, going back a couple of years to February 2018 with architectural historian Frank Albo. Enjoy. Frank Albo was featured as the code-breaking protagonist in the best-selling book, The Hermetic Code. And he is an architectural historian, and we'll touch on the Masonic symbology encoded in places like the Manitoba legislature. But he has this beautiful, beautiful new book out, Astana, Architecture, Myth, and Destiny. Now, Astana is not, some mythical, well, it is mythical, but it's real, too. It's this gleaming, modern capital city of Kazakhstan. And without a doubt, the world's weirdest capital city. We're going to find out all about the architecture in Astana. And we'll also learn about the Astana Challenge. If you solve the puzzle of the hidden messages in this book, you could win a luxury vacation to what Mr. Albo is calling the Illuminati capital of the world. Astana, the Illuminati capital of the world. Well, he'll tell us more in mere moments. The only thing I know about Kazakhstan is being a Toronto Maple Leaf fan, I remember we had a kind of a big, lanky forward by the name of Andropov, and he was from Kazakhstan. That's it. That's all you know. And then, all of a sudden, the other day in the mail comes this very, very heavy book. There were two of them, actually. And my little guy North is on mail call duty this week, so he had to go to the door. He could barely carry this thing down the stairs. It's just a solid, it's like a coffee table book, except it's not just all beautiful, glossy photographs, and there are many of them. It's just jam-packed with amazing information here as well. And we're going to talk about that. Astana, the architecture, the myth, and destiny. It is the ninth largest country in the world. It's the largest landlocked country in the world. And, of course, a former Soviet republic. But it has some weird architecture. Some of it's, it's very new. It's shiny and gleamy, but it's got some obvious ancient Egyptian influences. There's a pyramid there, the phoenix, the world's largest glass sphere, which I believe is the library. So, again, why are some calling Astana world headquarters for the Illuminati? Let's find out, shall we? Frank Albo was featured as the code-breaking protagonist in the best-selling book, The Hermetic Code. And his approach to architecture, landscape, and design seeks to transform public spaces into interactive journeys of discovery, which elevate the mind and promote a sense of wonder. He holds graduate degrees in ancient Near Eastern languages, art history, and a PhD in the history of architecture from the University of Cambridge. Dr. Albo has a unique ability to peel back conventional history to provide new vistas of understanding about our built environment and the cultures of the past. He's currently an adjunct professor of history at the University of Winnipeg, where he specializes in architecture, Freemasonry, and the Western esoteric tradition. Frank Albo, welcome to Conspiracy Unlimited. How are you?
I'm excellent. Thank you for inviting me, Richard. It's I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Well, first of all, congrats on the book. This is truly impressive. It's a gorgeous book. I mean, never mind the information, which is amazing, but it just looks terrific, and I congratulate you on that. Now, a lot of people know you from your book, The Hermetic Code, and about Masonic symbols in the Manitoba legislature and your search to sort of uncover the meaning and so forth and learn about the architect Frank Worthington Simon. So let me ask you a little bit about that before we move on to Astana. If you could just take us on a very quick guided tour of the Manitoba legislature. Tell me about some of the interesting symbols that sort of first jumped out at you, as a young grad student.
Well, it happened by sheer accident. I was in the last year of my undergraduate degree, and I was going into the Department of Near and Middle Eastern Languages at the University of Toronto, and I spotted on the roof of the Manitoba Legislative Building two recumbent Egyptian sphinxes. And like the fabled story of old, I was enchanted thoroughly by this bizarre feature and set out to answer, as it were, the riddle of the Sphinx. And that just brought me into the door where I began to notice other features of the building that thoroughly inspired me. And it took me down a rabbit hole of basically enchantment and discovery, where I spent four graduate degrees and 10 years trying to get into the mind of the dead British architect and genius, Frank Worthington Simon, who built this building as a reconstruction of King Solomon's Temple and also a 5,000 years of lost architectural knowledge. He was a high-level Freemason. He believed in the tradition of Freemasonry very deeply and used the building as a tableau to tell the story of his ancient fraternity in a coded way. It's so coded, in fact, that for 100 years, no one ever noticed some of the most obvious features of the building, including, of course, that there is Hermes Trismegistus on the dome.
The golden boy.
Correct.
And explain, why is Hermes, or I guess that's Mercury in the ancient Roman pantheon, why is Hermes special to the Freemasons?
Well, Hermes is one of the Prisca Theologia, which for Renaissance historians and scholars was the first philosopher. He was seen as a pagan prophet of Christian truth before the coming of the Christian revelation, and a contemporary of Moses. He was attributed to having written 40,000 books, but by the time of the Renaissance, these works were lost and then suddenly rediscovered, and it brought about an entirely new way of seeing the ancient world. Hermes, as we know, or Mercury, the elusive messenger of Zeus, is not the Hermes Trismegistus of that I'm speaking of. This particular Hermes is a conflation of the Egyptian god Thoth, the god of writing and magic, and the ancient scribe, and the Mercury that we're familiar with, the guide of souls, the psychopomp, and the trickster. And around late antiquity, both of these figures merge into a new character, Trismegistus, the thrice greatest, and he becomes the father of all esoteric knowledge, alchemy, astrology, number magic, mysticism through occult philosophy, and basically the entire species of esoteric philosophy should be attributed in total to this character, Hermes Trismegistus. And in fact, in Freemasonry, he appears in the oldest manuscripts of the medieval period that signaled the origins of Freemasonry. So there he is, glistening on the dome, locally known as the Golden Boy, but unaware is that he is pointing to these mysteries deep inside the building.
Now, Frank Worthington Simon, did he work on Balmoral Castle for Queen Victoria?
Mm-hmm.
Did he remodel it or something?
He worked on several very noted buildings. He was an elusive professor. He had an interest in biblical languages. His father, for instance, was one of the most famous nonconformist theologians of the British Empire. And at a very young age, he took towards finding mysteries coded in art and architecture and sought to basically rebuild them. So in the case of Balmoral, he did the reconstructions there, but he worked on many wonderful buildings. But he had an artist penchant for truth. He had a wandering spirit, but his final work was this building in Winnipeg, which at the time was the Continental Showpiece. It was the most expensive building in the country. Winnipeg was destined to be the Chicago of the North. It's not the Winnipeg that we see of today. It was supposed to be a city of great promise, and this building was the signal, kind of the Roman maxim, build it and they will come, this idea of using grand architecture to signal the rise of the city that was growing faster than any other city in North America at the turn of the 20th century. So this building was this showpiece, and Simon was selected to build it, and he basically poured into the building a history lesson in stone, and he was hoping to be figured out.
Ah, so the people that commissioned this work and hired him, they didn't know what he was doing.
No, I don't think so. I mean, there's some speculation that some of the artists, he had some very seasoned artists that worked alongside him, might have known one element or another. But I think in total, he was the grand architect, and it was his vision to build it in that way. So just walking through the building, the sphinxes, you wouldn't notice because they're not visible from the ground. but they bear a hieroglyphic inscription on their chest, a bona fide ancient hieroglyphic message which beckons the sun god to give life to something in the building. And we find out later what that is. You walk into the Grand Staircase Hall, perhaps the most beautiful staircase hall in North America, and it is designed to be exactly 66.6 feet in width and 66.6 feet in length.
Just a few more moments on the Manitoba legislature, because it's fascinating. You were sort of giving us the guided tour, but I can't figure out where the architect was coming from, because, I mean, on the one hand, there are allusions to, like, the Last Supper in there, I recall reading about, but then there are these, you know, more pagan allusions. Was he a Christian? What was he?
Oh, yeah, he was certainly of Christian persuasion, but as part of the fraternal tradition in which he's emulating Freemasonry, they uphold the notion that they are the progenitors, the builders of the great religious institutions of the world. So from the Abrahamic faith, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, right up into the pagan temples and, of course, the Egyptian marbles. So the idea is that he contained in one building this kind of encyclopedia of world architecture as an homage to the craft of Freemasonry. And in that regard, there is one building that stands alone as the beau ideal of perfection, and that's King Solomon's Temple, and that's where he chose to incorporate perhaps the most important room in the building as a perfect reconstruction of the Holy of Holies of King Solomon's Temple with a replica Ark of the Covenant.
And wasn't it his intention, this is kind of a pipe dream, I think, but he actually thought that the, I guess they call them MLAs out there, the members of the Legislative Assembly would actually wear togas to debate,
right,
and to vote?
Well, yes. He is a student of the idea that arrives out of Freemasonry, that architecture, among all disciplines known to the human imagination, has the capacity to reform the soul. So the idea is that could you construct a building that by virtue of its design and its geometry and its orientation, that it would inculcate divine virtues upon you. And that was the idea with this building, so much so that he believed that when it opened to the public, it would make you more intelligent, better balanced, and altogether more civilized human beings just by entering into the building. And I take the people, for the last 7 years, I've done guided tours of the mm-hmm. building, and I sort of conclude by saying at the very end, do you feel in some regard, knowing what you've now seen here, that you feel somewhat more illuminated as you leave? And obviously I leave that as a burning question.
Right. And the premier at the time, Gary Doer, mm-hmm. Didn't he come wandering into your office one time and asking you about your work and said something like, what do you think, the place is haunted? And
mm-hmm.
tell me about
that. Well, actually, he invited me to his office. Oh. I wrote my undergraduate thesis on the building, focusing on two rooms. And one I called the Room of Protection, the other I called the Altar. And unbeknownst to me, this paper that I wrote had circulated to the highest levels of government, and when it landed on the premier's desk, he called me into his office, and I was rather shocked to see across his oak desk a copy of my thesis, and he was flipping through it, and he sternly looked up at me and said, I think that you think this building's haunted. And I very brashly said, the White House has nothing on this building. And right then and there, he gave me a grant to explore the building's properties. And he said, well, what do we need? And I said, well, I need to be in this building at all times of the day. I need to go to all parts of the building. I need access to all government documents related to the building's construction. And I was basically given this carte blanche access for 2 years, and it led to what later became the publication, The Hermetic Code.
Well, good for you for grabbing the bull, or I should say the bison's bison
right.
by the horns.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and people have sort of referred to you as the real life Dan Brown for unraveling this mystery. Now, I want to get into this book again. Let me hold this up again. Astana. Mm-hmm. I got to be honest with you. I was not familiar with Kazakhstan's capital city until this impressive book arrived at my front door. Why do you say it could be the capital city for the Illuminati?
Well, Those aren't my words. That's basically the conclusion that is many people, bloggers and otherwise, have exclaimed on the internet. So that's what drew my attention to the city is, well, on the surface, and rightly so, most people in the West probably think of Kazakhstan, and the knee-jerk thought response is, isn't that the homeland of Borat, let alone the Illuminati capital of the world? So I was, similar to how I stumbled upon the Manitoba Legislative Building, I was preparing a graduate course on utopian cities for students, and I wanted to do a chronology of this, these times and efforts to build paradise on Earth. So I thought I'd begin with Plato's Atlantis and conclude with Astana, the most recently planned capital in the world, the capital of Kazakhstan. And as I was doing my Google search, I stumbled upon the same nefarious conclusions, that when you see a giant glass pyramid, a large all-seeing eye, and a reconstruction of a UFO as the architectural marvels of a capital, that has led many people to assume that it must be the Illuminati capital of the world. And funnily enough, with around the same time, there were three great archaeological discoveries that happened in Kazakhstan over the last, say, 7 years. One was potentially the first step pyramid on the steppes of Central Asia. The other are massive, immense geoglyphs like the Nazca lines in Peru. But and among these symbols that have been carved on the ground perhaps 8,000 years ago is the very first swastika. And additionally, there is, and this has created a lot of rumble, is a giant 1,200-foot pentagram, which happened to be spotted by somebody doing a search on Google Earth. It's called the Devil's Pentagram. So there were all of these wild associations with Astana, and I thought this was the perfect opportunity to step in and find out what was really brewing there. And funnily enough, and my apologies for this monologue, but as I was doing all this research, like out of the blue, I got a call from the protocol officer of Manitoba. Every now and then when dignitaries come to Manitoba, I give, I'm requested by the government to give tours, whether it's the Prince of Wales or Her Majesty the Queen. I'll be asked to give a kind of sanitized version of the Hermetic Code tour. And on this occasion, the ambassador of Kazakhstan and his wife were there at the same time that I'm reading all across my the tabs on my computer screen that the Illuminati has created a capital called Astana. So I just jumped on the opportunity to meet him. And when we met, I basically said that the architecture is so bizarre and strange, you need a formidable study historian to examine it. And that is what launched the book.
Well, now the man behind a lot of the designs is the leader there, right? Nazarbayev, who, I mean, he rules that country with an iron fist.
Oh, totally. I mean, here among the 21st century autocrats, this guy is Tom Brady. There is perhaps no other modern leader to have used architecture and fantasy to crystallize the dreams of a nation like Nazarbayev, and he has done it with pretty much autonomous control. And so Astana is really the brainchild of a single leader. And so that's what he set out to do. I turned this on its head. If you have peered through my book, that I'm interested in not looking at the politics of statescraft, but really how we have used architecture and myth to galvanize our hopes and dreams, unlike nothing else. These are the two ingredients that have really forged nations: architecture and mythology.
All right, it's quite a remarkable building, this Bayterek Tower. It looks like a hand coming out of the ground holding a golden ball or a golden egg. Mm-hmm. Tell me about that building.
That's totally bizarre.
Yeah,
it's Bayterek Tower is meant to symbolize the Tree of Life, and you summit the Tree of Life, and you're informed about this ancient Kazakh fable, which is actually a Sumerian fable called the Tale of Etana, perhaps the oldest myth in world history, around this young child hero that saves humanity by being lifted up into heaven on the back of a hero, on the back of an eagle. And this building basically evokes this ancient fable and constructs myth into this golden glory. So the sphere in the center is meant to be the sun. You're meant to participate in this journey by journeying up into the golden rays of the sun, and you peer down the great mall of Astana, and you see nothing but phoenix, phoenix, eagle, eagle. And I look into that and I explore that notion of how eagle and statecraft have gone hand in hand since prior to Rome. Well, in fact, why is it that the eagle has been the emblem of choice for the rise of a new culture or civilization, whether it's Mexico or Germany, yep, or Persia or the very first city-states of Sumer? It's always been the eagle.
The Byzantine Empire, the double-headed eagle in that case.
Yeah, of course, exactly.
I mean, but Zeus, one of his symbols was the eagle. Does it go back to Zeus?
Yes. In fact, Zeus is one of the elements of this age-old fable called the Tale of Etana. Most people, if they know anything about Sumerian literature, are probably familiar with the Epic of Gilgamesh, but even older than Gilgamesh is this story, which begins basically with the construction of a great city, a monumental central tower, and the quest for eternal youth with the help of an eagle. And this story has been retold in countless ways, about 300 variations around the world, from Ireland to the Arctic Circle, from the Alexander Romance to Garuda, the myth of the Hindu deity Vishnu, and countless others. In Greek mythology, it is Ganymede, who is the boy abducted by Zeus in the form of an eagle to serve as the cupbearer in Olympus. So it's a very ancient fable and story or myth. So the buildings in Astana are not just, you know, and I think that's a very blasé account to just say, oh, it's an Illuminati city. It goes much, much deeper. It goes into the notion of myth as a form of changing a whole new order of things, and that's what the capital is setting out to do.
More of my conversation with architectural technologist Frank Albo when Conspiracy Unlimited returns.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to be buried in an avalanche?
Weird foreign feeling of despair.
Or how it feels to crash a skydive?
I remember hearing a thud, feeling my body hit the ground.
Or how you would react if you were being attacked by an alligator?
At the end of my leg is this huge alligator head on my leg.
These are the stories you'll hear on the podcast called What Was That Like? True stories told by the actual person who went through it. You'll hear from a victim of an attack.
Dragging me into the bathroom and saying, I'm going to kill you, now you're going to die.
You'll hear from a man who discovered a baby.
How could this be? How could there be a baby on the ground?
And you'll hear actual 911 calls.
Clinton County 911.
There's a man at my back door. He's trying to get in.
What Was That Like is a podcast about real people in unreal situations. Search for What Was That Like on any podcast app or at whatwasthatlike.com.
We all enjoy a little mystery. Every other week, One Strange Thing presents forgotten stories from America's newspaper archives. They all have something in common, a single element that can't quite be explained. Join us on One Strange Thing, and you'll hear about a man who was literally stricken with genius. A 21st century child who remembered piloting a World War II bomber. A mysterious, unidentifiable blob in Texas. And then there was the lizard man stalking through small-town South Carolina. From cryptids and disappearances to modern-day miracles, One Strange Thing brings you stories that are very real and just a little otherworldly. Subscribe now, wherever you listen.
Do you want to know what it's like to hang out with MS-13 in El Salvador? How the Russian mafia fought battles all over Brooklyn in the 1990s.
Or what about that time I got lost in the Burmese jungle hunting the world's biggest meth lab? Or why the Japanese Yakuza have all those crazy dragon tattoos? I'm Sean Williams.
And I'm Danny Gold. and we're the hosts of the Underworld podcast. We're journalists that have traveled all over, reporting on dangerous people and places. And every week, we'll be bringing you a new story about organized crime from all over the world.
We know this stuff because we've been there. We've seen it, and we've got the near misses and embarrassing tales to go with it. We'll mix in reporting with our own experiences in the field, and we'll throw in some bad jokes while we're at it.
The Underworld podcast explores the criminal underworlds that affect all of our lives, whether we know it or not. Available wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Andrew Gold, a fallen BBC journalist interviewing the heretics and rebels brave enough to speak out against mainstream narratives. Here's Coleman Hughes, John Ronson, and the Trigonometry podcast guys bringing controversy to the fore.
How'd you feel if a person of a different race moved in next door?
I spent a while with a politically correct faction of the Ku Klux Klan.
The system punishes people for wrongthink. It's heartbreaking.
Here's My Unorthodox Life Netflix star Julia Hart on getting out of a Hasidic Jewish cult.
Why can't I be okay with being silent and subservient? Everyone else is.
And biologist Richard Dawkins on trans activism.
It's perfectly legitimate to say, I am a man, but I feel feminine. But to then say, therefore I am a woman, is just a betrayal of language.
Now it's your turn. Rebel against the mainstream and find a home in this sensible alternative space by subscribing to Heretics Podcast.
One tablespoon of ESS60 from C60 Evo helps keep me pain-free, energized, and mentally focused. And I'm sleeping so much better since I started taking ESS60 back in November. ESS60 is the consumable form of C60, the miracle molecule discovered by Nobel Prize-winning chemists in the 1990s. ESS60 is a mega antioxidant, 172 times more powerful than vitamin C. Check out the Paris study, a peer-reviewed scientific study online, where ESS60 suspended in olive oil was fed to rats. The rats fed ESS60 lived almost twice their normal lifespan. I can't sit here and tell you I'm going to live to be 112, but I'm 56 and I haven't felt this youthful, energized, and pain-free since I was in my 20s. ESS60 from C60 Evo. If you want to discover the benefits of this amazing miracle molecule for yourself, go to the episode notes for this podcast and click on the link for c60evo.com. And don't forget to use the code RS1SPEC when ordering, and you'll receive an additional 5% off. ESS60, the miracle molecule from C60 Evo. It's changed my life. Discover what it can do for you. This product has not been evaluated by the FDA and is not intended to cure, diagnose, or cure. If you have a medical concern, please consult your healthcare provider.
Theoretical physicists say that there is as many as 12 hyperdimensions. Here are just three of them. Conspiracy Unlimited. Conspiracy Unlimited. Conspiracy Unlimited. Pretty cool, huh? Here's an extra one. Conspiracy Unlimited. Hey, how about one more? Conspiracy Unlimited. And the great thing is we have 6 hyperdimensions left. Conspiracy Unlimited.
5.
Frank Elbow is with us. You'll know him from his work with the Hermetic Code, and his new book is Astana, Architecture, Myth, and Destiny. We'll tell you about the Astana Challenge. This is really, really cool. There are sort of clues encrypted into this book, and if you solve the puzzle, basically, you can win a trip to Astana, a luxury vacation. Do they get a lot of tourists there now, or is it kind of a closed society, Frank?
No, they just celebrated the opening of the World Expo, and about 3 million people went to visit Astana for that. You do not need a visa from Canada. It's the Central Asian countries. This is really the kind of the crown jewel, as it were. Very open towards foreign tourism and also foreign investment.
Oh, interesting. But it's ostensibly it's a communist country, isn't it?
No.
No. Ah, okay. Interesting.
It was one of the 15 countries that broke off after the Soviet Union. It was the least likely to succeed because Kazakhstan had been plagued by perhaps the worst deck of cards in the 20th century. It was the dumping ground for Stalin's gulags. It was a nuclear test site for nearly 600 secret nuclear tests. and the world's worst environmental disaster, the drying up of the Aral Sea, had happened on Kazakh soil, and there was a famine there. So for it's really an apotheosis from literally the flight of the resurrection of the eagle could perhaps be best symbolized by this city. It was the engine that could, so to speak.
Fascinating. So back to the Bay Turk Tower.
Okay.
You have this wooden globe at the top, and it's surrounded by these, I guess they're petals, 17 of them, which are supposed to represent some of the major religions. So what's the message there?
Okay, I think you're conflating that with the Pyramid of Peace and Reconciliation.
Ah, perhaps. I do that sometimes.
So
I conflate.
There are three major buildings that are most noteworthy, perhaps four, in Astana. The Bayturik Tower, which we discussed, the giant glass sphere of the World Expo site, the world's largest sphere.
Yes.
There's also the Presidential Library, which I described as the all-seeing eye. Perhaps there's no other building in the world more redolent of an all-seeing eye than this one, and then the building that we're talking about now, which is the Pyramid of Peace and Reconciliation. It sounds bizarre to say this, but every 3 years, at the apex of a giant glass pyramid in Kazakhstan, is where the Assembly of World Traditional Religions meet, where they invite religious leaders from around the world to meet and discuss notions of religious equality. It's a sort of multi-faith cathedral dedicated to the renunciation of violence and promotion of faith. But the reason it's done there is because Kazakhstan in its soul is a nomadic country. It's partially, I think, superficially Islamic, but they're very much open to the tolerance of other faiths. It's perhaps most tolerant of the Central Asian countries, and because of this, it has been a kind of hodgepodge of religious cultural experience. It incorporates Buddhism, Christianity, Nestorian Christianity, the mystical branch of Islam called Sufism.
Mm-hmm.
There is a Jewish presence, and so even Zoroastrianism, some of the lost ancient religions like Tengrianism, this animist belief system celebrating the virtue of the sky, are all found here, still left alive in Kazakh soil. So they've decided to evoke this in the form of a building that is a pyramid.
Interesting. And is
in fact, the World Traditional Religions, they meet every 3 years at the apex of this pyramid, and that will be happening this year in June.
And what is the significance of the three levels? Is there kind of an illuminated symbolism there?
Well, the building itself was designed by the British architect Norman Foster to be a journey from darkness into light. So when you descend into the building, you literally descend into the belly of the earth in this darkened foyer and passage, and then slowly you ascend up to this gleaming peak of light where it's surrounded by a kind of, well, it's really a sanctum sanctorum from darkness to light.
And on the ceiling, again, isn't there kind of another kind of an invocation of the sun god?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. The two features in are essential to understanding the matrix of belief in Astana. One is the ever-presence of the sun, and the other is the eternal blue sky. So the gold of the sun and the blue of the sky are, I think even by government prescription, buildings have to have either a blue or a gold facade.
But the sun god, isn't that antithetical to Christianity?
Well, it depends how you want to look at it. I mean, it's the in what sense?
Well, when I think of the sun god, I mean, we think of, you know, pagan worship.
In this case, it's more a notion of the world is the cosmos is alive, and there are life-giving values and virtues of the sun. And in many ways, even Yahweh and Jesus from the Gospels are evoking these old solar notions of heavenly ascent and the power of the sun.
We were going to talk about this entertainment center, sort of billed as the world's largest tent Tell me about that.
Okay, this is another Norman Foster creation. It is meant to be both an allusion to the highest peak in Kazakhstan, the Khan Tengri Mountain. There goes the Tengri again, the notion of this reference to the supreme celestial deity of the Altaic world, the sky. But also it is meant to symbolize the tent, the ancient nomadic tent that the Kazakhs would journey with. And in fact, in many regards, the tent is seemingly facile and a rudimentary architectural construction, but it is full of esoteric symbolism, which is incorporated into this building. So the building on the surface looks like some Xanadu-esque fantasy shopping mall in Kazakhstan, but on another level, it is meant to evoke these older traditions of the ancient nomads and Tengrianism in particular, this belief of being ecologically minded and deeply connected to the earth and nature.
And then they have this the shopping center. It's got an artificial beach.
Yeah, right. So it's got. I even forget these other details. Right. So there, it's. It's a bit of a pleasure dome in that there's all the shopping experiences, and at the height of it, there is a full beach with water slide and everything.
And I'm guessing that this was all paid for because this is an oil-rich country, right? They've got billions and billions of barrels of oil there.
Correct. I mean, and we should probably clarify that Kazakhstan has the full house of natural resources. It's rich in oil, gas, diamond, uranium, and gold. And it uses its tremendous oil wealth to create this city to be a kind of beacon of a kind of billboard of foreign investment. That's one level of looking at the city. But beneath that are these mythical elements and themes that actually take us back to our ancient collective past.
And with only, about 16 million residents, I mean, mm-hmm. are most of the citizens then rich?
No. No. The Astana itself is designed to be only grow to 3 million people. Most of what they did was in designing the capital is they designed the capital to be a master plan from start. Most capital cities don't do this, but in Astana, it's perimetered by a giant tree ring. And it's meant to only grow to 3 million people because after that amount, you get urban squalor, poverty, and other things that aren't good for the civic good. So this right now, I think it has a population of just over 1 million. But once it reaches 3 million, then they've already been preparing other planned capitals.
Aha.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, I know this isn't a show about politics, but, you know, the president there, I think according to their constitution, they're only supposed to serve 5-year terms. And here we are since independence, 1991, he's been the only president.
That's right. So I mean, this guy is the a kind of real-life George Washington of Kazakhstani people. He is, in many respects, and I sort of compare him to Walt Disney in the book, both kind of Jefferson meets Walt Disney on steroids in the sense that Jefferson being a founding father that believed architecture could guide the civic process of the nation, and Disney in the sense of creating this fantasy experience that is meant to collectively bridge together ideas of solving the chaotic urban settings of modern cities. That's what Disney set out to do. He was spent 30 years of his life working on town planning. So, but him as his life and experience is rather, it's almost like a storybook legend. He grew up in a nomad's yurt, the most humble beginnings on the steppes, and he rose to become perhaps the most strategically important leader in Central Asia. I mean, this is the bridge between the East and the West, and it is wholly run by Nazarbayev. Nazarbayev is is Kazakhstan, and many. They thought it was a foolish errand that he was trying to build this capital city. He didn't have much support for it, but that was what he set out to do. And he used, fable, folklore, and ideas of architecture to do that.
So
that to me makes it unique.
It seems like they've decided, okay, we'll get to the democracy part later. Let's just work on the economic development first.
Yeah, very much so. Nazarbayev right from the outset said that Kazakhstan would be a managed democracy. That's sort of a euphemism for saying, okay, we were under the Soviet Union for nearly 300 years. There's no way we're going to go in toto to democracy and suddenly think this is going to be rainbows and lollipops. So it's certainly managed. He doesn't have any official opposition, and he is elected democratically, you could say, quote unquote, by 90 percentile since 1991. They have no interest in wanting another public figure. That's why I call him the Tom Brady of autocrats. Most people hate him, but he wins Super Bowls.
And as you say, to refer to it as the, you know, the Illuminati capitalist is kind of trite. However, let me ask you, I mean, is there some nefarious intention here? Should we be concerned about what's going on, not only in Astana, but in Kazakhstan?
Well, that wasn't the subject of this book, and I'm glad you brought that up, because what I set out to do in this book was to do something I'd never done before, which was my entire body of research up until this point was in decoding real, legitimate Masonic buildings, gardens, cemeteries, and the like. And in this case, this was a wholly imaginary Masonic capital, at least in the eyes of many, or an Illuminati capital, that I wanted to encode. And in the process of encoding this capital, I mean, I've placed these ideas here. It's not like I'm inventing them entirely. Mm-hmm. I'm using solid historical research and work. And the reason I'm setting out to do this is because I think it is myth more than anything else that can actually change the world. So I'm using this city as a fable, as a way of kind of turning things on its head. There is a subtext in my entire book. I spent a very long time working on writing a subtext within the book. Every image is very carefully chosen. Even every word, seemingly out of place, is there for a very specific reason, because I want to invite the public to read deeply using the language of design, architecture, and the imagination to see what lies beneath. And that's what this book is really about. At one level, it's a superficial reading, just like the stories of the Bible. That is one reading of the Bible. At a deeper level, there is an allegorical level. And at a much more even deeper level than that, there are different truths. And so I'm setting out to say, at one level, you see that this is the Illuminati capital of the world. On another level, you'll find that there are these mythic associations. And yet at another level, which I'm really hoping to get people's attention, is to look and read very deeply. And to do that, I've created this kind of ploy, a device to get people in the door, which is this $30,000 prize, or perhaps by this summer, it might be 2 Bitcoin. So I'm going to use that as a kind of carrot to get you to read deeply into the text. And when it's solved, you'll find out why I set out to write this book the way I did.
That's the Astana Challenge. Now, can you tell us a little bit about how this works exactly?
Well, all I can tell you is that concealed in the work is enigmas, secrets, and a kind of hidden language, as it were. And I'm setting out to find the astute reader to look carefully at the book, every element of the book. And by doing so, I properly engage you, hopefully, to participate in the myth. That's the point. It's kind
right.
of Joseph Campbell-esque in the sense
yes.
that Joseph Campbell said, where is Odysseus today? He is on the street. You are Hercules. And I want, in a similar way, to say, listen, if we are going to change the world, then we need to look at things at a much deeper level.
So how do they enter?
If you just go to my website, it's astanamyth.com. Well, mm-hmm. first of all, you have to buy the book.
Right.
You buy the book, you go through it, and you might see that there are some things out of place. For instance, I announced on Facebook today that I was going to give a clue. It has remained unsolved so far. So what I do is on my Instagram and my Facebook, I place little kind of suggestive clues to get people to get kind of deeper into the meaning of the subtext of the book. By doing so, you just go to my website, astanamyth.com. There's a thing that says Astana Challenge. You click on that, and you submit your answer.
This is absolutely brilliant. It's a terrific idea. It gets people engaged, and as I said, it's a fabulous, fabulous, impressive book. Frank, I've enjoyed this so much. I learned a heck of a lot. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And again, it's astanamyth.com. Astanamyth.com.
Yes, astanamyth.com. And also look at my Instagram. I just posted a clue today, so off you go. The prize is still wide open.
All right. Frank Albo, thank you again.
Thank you.
Okay, before I dim the lights in my little studio beneath the stairs, I'll be back on the other side to share a few details about an upcoming episode. Hey there, August is fast approaching, and that means I'm hard at work on another edition of Inner Sanctum, my free monthly newsletter. Inner Sanctum features my monthly brief, a column of my thoughts and opinions on what's happening in the world. It features a spotlight on a past guest, a look ahead to an upcoming episode of my weekly syndicated radio program, The Conspiracy Show. It features a look at this month in conspiracy and UFO history, and my Conspiracy Unlimited podcast episode pick of the month, and so much more. To get your free monthly newsletter, Inner Sanctum, delivered to your email inbox, just go to my website, strangeplanet.ca, strangeplanet.ca. Scroll down to the bottom of the page and click on Inner Sanctum and register. It's fast, easy, and again, absolutely free. Coming up next time on Conspiracy Unlimited, Gulf War veteran and retired police officer Ed Hashbarger joins me to examine the science of fracking. Until then, I'm Richard Serrett. So long for now.
A new Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serrett drops every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at conspiracyunlimitedpodcast.com. Blow your mind. That is all for now. Oh, and remember to share and give a 5-star review, because we have huge egos and need love. We're like cats. We need constant petting.